Good morning. My name is Greg Frank. I'm a hearings officer. I've been assigned to hear case number 3180014. It's an appeal by, and I never pronounce this right, is it Razor?
Razor, yes.
Razor. Okay, Razor LLC. And I have reviewed the file to the extent that I've had an opportunity that had access to it. And so what I'd like to do to start with is I was a hearings officer here for 16 years, and I've been retired for about a year. I work for other jurisdictions now on a contract basis. I don't know this gentleman, and I've only met this gentleman a couple times. I don't know the young lady. I apologize. So I don't know really any of you well enough to say that I have any bias or conflict. The only built-in bias that anybody's ever claimed is that I work for the city a long time, and therefore you must think the city is right all the time. For those who appear before me on behalf of the city, they will certainly attest that that is not always the case. My job isn't to side with the city. My job is also not to oppose the city. My job is to take the information in the file, apply it to the relevant laws and rules, and see where we go from there. So with that, I'm going to ask, we'll start on this side with the city side, for you to identify yourself. Then I have some questions. Then I'm going to probably be a little pushy with the rest of this pre-hearing because I've got an agenda here today that I'd like to move through. Then I'll open it up for whatever you want. So if you'll identify yourself, starting on my right.
Ken McGair, MC capital G AIR for the City of Portland, 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue, room 430. And with me is Julia Glick, also with the City of Portland City Attorney's Office. And Ms. Glick will be handling the hearing going forward from here on out.
Sir?
My name is Eric Haney. I'm an attorney here in Portland with Perkins Coie, and I'm here on behalf of Razor, which is an affiliate of Uber.
Okay. First question, and should I be addressing Ms. Glick then?
From either of us is fine.
All right, I'll just use the city and then
sure.
Whoever pipes in. What I'm not going to have is both of you, when I ask a question, I'd like it to be centered on one of the person or the other. I just don't like disadvantages of numbers or advantages of numbers. My first question is, do any of you have an objection that I hear this case on the basis of either a bias or a conflict of interest issue? Mr. Haney?
Mr. Frank, or is your honor, Mr. Frank?
Frank is fine. Some people will just hey you, but
I
prefer not that. But I don't like it to be for the Mr. Hearings Officer. I'm not comfortable with that. I wear a suit. I don't wear a robe. It just feels uncomfortable. But any objections?
No, we had no sense or any reason to believe whatsoever coming in here that would even be an issue.
It's something that I take care of at the start of each and every hearing. City have any objections?
No.
All right. So from here on out, at least for the next 15, 20, 30 minutes, I would guess, I want to make sure I'm controlling the questions. And then at the conclusion of that, like I said, I'll open it up. What I've done is I've reviewed two documents carefully, right? And that is exhibit number 2, which is the determination letter. In fact, I'm going to ask both of you if you'll look at exhibit number 2. It's a letter to Razor from PBOT, dated January 29th, 2018. I think there's a duplicate of it. This is exhibit number 10. Are we there?
So you said January 29th, 2018, is that what you said?
Yeah.
So?
Yes, I'm there.
Okay. It's RE penalty for violation of Portland City Code 1640-240. Signed by Leah Treat. Are we all there?
Yes.
All right. City, is that the determination letter in this case?
Yes, it is.
Mr. Haney, is that the letter you're objecting to?
Is
that the document we are fighting over?
Yes.
Okay. In exhibit number 3, we have on page 3, if you'll turn to it, there is at the bottom of that lines 19 through 26. Are we there? So this is your statement of grounds for administrative appeal, Mr. Haney. It's your document.
Oh, the brief, so to speak.
No,
I'm sorry.
I was going to call it whatever you want to call
okay.
it. I'll call it the brief.
I'm sorry, sir. You said which page?
Page 3.
Yes, I'm there.
Item A. Tending to put words in everyone's mouths, and then you're going to have to act like lawyers and take them back out again. I'm looking at that paragraph and saying there's no contest to my jurisdiction or this office's jurisdiction over this case. Is that correct, Mr. Haney?
That's correct.
Miss City, any objections to
no,
that?
No objections.
All right. So now we start with the harder parts, because I do perceive that there's some things. You do understand that a pre-hearing conference is authorized by the hearings officer's rules in 9.05, certainly was in one of the letters or this document from Mr. Haney. And I perceive the pre-hearings conference as to, as much as I can extract, and this is certainly from my side, extract stipulations, agreements, and get a point of view that we can narrow to the point that I have some understanding of and control over what this case is going to be about. So that's where we're going, and that's my philosophy with this. All right. And these are going to be incredibly simplistic questions in some respects, but I need the answers. From the city's perspective, and I am going to go down your determination letter, so I'm going to concentrate on Exhibit 2 right now. All right, that is the January 29th letter that I first referenced. And it appears to me that the violation that's referenced in that letter is a violation of Portland City Code 1640-240-K.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah, K4 in
particular. K4, all right. Mr. Haney, is that what we're fighting about, is whether or not there's a violation of 1640-240-K4?
I'm actually not able to immediately answer that, not because I don't desire to. I apologize. I maybe had a different sense of what this. I thought we were just talking about scheduling today.
No, I'm gonna put you to the fire here, and I will take whatever time is necessary to try to get these issues narrowed. And so if you wish additional time, I will give you that additional time.
Well, may I speak? I also thought
Sir?
This was about scheduling a little bit. And as you know, we haven't had a chance to respond to what they provided in their statement of grounds for administrative appeal. And aside from the fact that, you know, we do think this hearing is about a violation of 1640.240, I think there are some other issues that were raised in the statement of grounds for administrative appeal that, you know, and I don't want to put words in Mr. Haney's mouth, are broader than just the violation of 1640.240. That's a mouthful. Which is to say that even if a violation occurred, you know, it was found of that particular code section, that there are other defenses that have been raised that we haven't had a chance to address. So I guess that's a long way of saying I'm amending my previous answer, but the violation is of the particular code section cited in the letter by the Bureau of Transportation. There are other issues that we would like the chance to address that were raised in Mr. Haney's brief. And that's kind of the framework for saying that this may be structured or may not be like all of the code hearing appeals that come with a particular driver gets fined, or the like. This is a little more complicated. There is some discrepancy about the number of drivers that the breach applied to that we need to kind of hash out through a discovery type process, one way or the other. And maybe we can go through that, in answering your questions here
it's
today.
It's going to, those are going to be answered by my questions, and your answers may well be equivocal. And that is that we may need more information, so we don't have a good answer right now. I understand that. But what I'm trying to do is I want to put as much stuff on the rearview mirror as I can, so that I'm looking forward to a dispute over the numbers, or I'm looking at a dispute over how the penalty was calculated, or it's a dispute over the method of notice. Those are all things that I want to find out whether or not we're looking forward into that and have the joy of dealing with that next month, or is that something we can simply put behind us now and we don't have to waste our time? And I may be wasting your time right now, but it's from my perspective, it is not. I want to know where we're going with this, because this is, number one, in a pure dollar amount, a little larger than this office typically deals with. Number two is that some of the defenses raised are beyond the scope of what are typically seen here, and they require more effort on the part of the hearings officer to make a good decision. And so I want to make sure that I know where we're going. So bear with me, if you would, please, on this.
Sure.
So I'm going back. Mr. Haney, are you objecting? Is your basis, is 1640, 240K4, is that your understanding that that's where the violation came out of? Is that where this all came from?
Yes, based on a review of the January 29th, 2018 letter, but there is also another provision that talks about how the fine was calculated.
I agree. Not there yet, but that's a fair answer. Okay. In the determination letter, it references an Oregon State statute, which includes some definitions. One definition is of breach of security. It includes a concept of breach of security and personal information. 646A, 6021A, are we going to be fighting over the definitions of breach of security, personal information, unauthorized acquisition? Mr. Haney, I think you can answer that probably the easiest. It appeared to me in your brief that you acknowledged that there was a data breach.
Yes.
Okay. And so we're not going to be fighting over whether or not there was a data breach. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Mr. McGair, you agree with that?
If he's stipulating that there was a data breach, then
well, that's what I'm putting words in his mouth, and he's smart enough.
Yeah, I think you're already there. That there has been a data breach. It's the argument is going to be about who was affected by that.
All right. So what I'm telling you is based on the answer from Mr. Haney, I don't want argument over whether or not there was a data breach. That's not going to be the issue. Whether or not there was 1, 2, 3, whatever number you want to talk about, that's still on the table.
Yes, and there's an intermediate issue. The quality of the data breach is a minor issue.
Agree. Okay, I agree. But whether or not, just up or down, there was a data breach, and the answer is yes, there was.
Correct.
All right. Mr. McGair, in the letter, it indicates that the city was notified. And then on page 2, it talks about the failure to report the data breach to those affected and the state and the city as required by state law and city codes. Can you help me out on what Uber didn't do?
Absolutely, Mr. Frank. It's our contention that the city was notified of the data breach on November 22nd of 2017, but the data breach occurred in the fall of 2016. And the company Uber was made aware of the data breach. I don't have the exact dates in front of me, but as I recall, it was approximately November, well, actually it is in the letter, November 14th of 2016 was when Uber discovered the data breach, and it was a full year later that they notified the city.
All right. So that leads me to an issue that I want to talk about and find out whether or not either of you can give me any authority or where I should be focusing or where you're going to focus the hearing on this notice of breach. All right? And Mr. McGair, you're inferring that there is a time commitment in the code and or the statute that requires something less than a year?
The code references what is the Identity Theft Protection Act under RS 646A, and the authority for the notification is in that. So the code, by reference to the Identity Theft Protection Act, sets the authority for the notification period.
All right.
So I guess
let's,
to answer
just
your
stop
question.
There. Just stop there. Mr. Haney, do you agree that notification requirements are, in this case, of the data breach arise out of the Oregon State Statute Oregon Consumer Identity Theft Protection Act?
I agree that that's the city's position. Our RAZR does not agree that there is a time component to the reporting obligation.
What I'm asking you is, you disagree with the city's contention. City's telling me that the authority for a time-oriented requirement for notice arises out of the Oregon Consumer Identity Theft Protection Act. Are you disagreeing with that?
If there is a source of a time component, it does come from there. But we don't believe that the city code incorporated that time.
All right, so here's what I'm after then. Can we stipulate that if there is a time requirement for a notice of a identity theft breach, it arises out of 646A? I'm assuming that it comes out of 604. And 604 is notice of breach of security.
Well, you're right, Mr. Frank. You do ask pointed questions. I appreciate that.
We're not going to spend March 13th trying to pull things off the wall. We're just not going to do that. I think it's an interesting case. I think you both brought up interesting issues. But I have to narrow them to the extent that I understand what I've got to do. And so what I'm asking is can we agree that the notice requirements for an identity theft or a data breach arise out of ORS 646A604?
Well, I think you intentionally or otherwise you may have asked a slightly different question just then. The notice requirement is born that we're here on is born from the city code. Now the city code then in turn does in fact reference the provisions that you're referencing.
I agree 100% with that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, so let me rephrase the stipulation and then you're going to either agree or disagree. That 1640-240K4 is the section of the city code that we're here to deal with. It indicates that the manner of notice arises out of the Oregon State Code or Oregon State statutes, and I'm making that specific, and that is ORS 646A604. I don't want to deal with everything between 600 and 628, quite honestly.
And I apologize, I don't have that specific provision right in front of me. I don't know if you do, sir.
Do you have any objections if I give it to him?
No, and I don't either.
Mine's marked up, so you now know the inner thoughts of the person making your decision, but you're both seeing it. Mr. McGarrett is aware, but I don't come into hearings unprepared.
And so, and I apologize, your question is,
is the notice requirement under the city code, is that referencing that particular section of the statute?
I want to respond to your questions as best I can. Certainly, I would agree that this section, 646A.604, is within the bookends of what's cited in the city code. So I would agree with that. I think that the city code does talk about a manner of compliance with provisions that are beyond this. So I guess I
would. Well, I'll leave that to be the argument, but I'm trying to find the source of the law that we're arguing what to interpret.
The Oregon statute talks about giving notice to the Attorney General, and so and a method for doing that, and I understand the code to be indicating the city's suggesting here and through its ordinance that people who are subject to the statute shall give notice to the city in the same manner that they would give notice to the Attorney General in the state statute.
I'm trying to figure out if that's the state statute we're talking about.
It looks to be, Mr. Frank, it could be that there's other provisions that are within the bookends referenced by the code that are relevant to the interpretation, but this does appear to be the notice.
Okay. Mr. Haney, I think it benefits you to say yes.
Yes.
But Mr. McGarrett or Ms. Glick, I'm not sure that's the case. So I'm more circumspect with their answer and where they may wish to. But I'm going to get to the point by hook or crook here.
I guess without having the ability to research this and respond more thoroughly, I don't want to definitively say yes. If that were the case, the code would say in the manner as provided in 646A.604. So I think that they left some wiggle room, and I suppose without knowing the exact.
How much time do you need to figure that out?
Well, we had proposed a schedule, but we can figure that particular issue. I mean, we had proposed a schedule between us as to how to handle this globally. We can figure that particular issue out, by the end of the week, if you'd like, in order to if it narrows it down.
Let's leave it at that. Okay, I agree with that. Okay, let's move on. I'm Can I have my notes back? I don't usually give out my copy of the statute, not because it usually has personal notes on it that, you know, to my friends and family, but it's usually not something I do. All right, let's talk about numbers. And I'm still on Exhibit 2, Mr. McGarr and Ms. Glick. In Exhibit 2, on the first page, there's a reference to 1,173 Oregonians affected, and it's in footnote number 1. Mm-hmm. And then it goes on to say 1,391. On page 2, appears that the penalty was calculated using 1,391. I would like to have some understanding as to, because I've also, it comes up in the brief, that it's either 328 or 300 or some number in between or roughly that. I want to find out whether or not we're going to be fighting over numbers. And I'm putting it nothing in your mouth. I just want to, are we fighting over numbers?
I think, and I'll address it first and I'll let you chime in. I think my hope is no. I think that all parties can kind of reach a consensus about what the actual number is. It's my understanding that PBOT and the company engaged in some back and forth to try to get at what that particular number is. The 1,173 was what was reported to the Attorney General and reported to us on November 22nd of 2017. That is, by definition, Oregonians, I think. The question, I think, and I don't want to put words in Mr. Haney's mouth, is how many of those are drivers that the city of Portland has jurisdiction over. And I think there is some, I don't want to say a dispute about that, but maybe unknown from our point of view as to what that actual number is. And I'll give you, by way of example, we have drivers that are certified to the city of Portland that are that have driver's licenses in Oregon. And we have drivers that are certified to the city of Portland that have driver's licenses in Washington State. And the number that was reported to the Washington Attorney General's office, and I understand that there could be a discrepancy about whether that falls under the gambit of 16.40.240 K4, but it would help us understand what the actual number is that we're in violation, if that. We're just trying to ascertain how many of these Oregonians are drivers who drive in the city of Portland.
Mr. Haney?
To answer your question specifically, I think there is at least presently a dispute over the number. I will say that council has been we've had a number of constructive phone calls with the goal mutually, from my perspective, of trying to bridge that gap. Our client has, from our client's perspective, explained why the number is or 300 or 328. But from the cities of Portland's perspective, they haven't, either haven't understood what we've said or they don't agree with it, we're not sure. But council is having a constructive discussion to try to resolve that so we're not fighting about the numbers. We're not there yet. We had spoken about the possibility of providing some additional discovery, even the possibility of a protective order so they don't have a security breach on top of a security breach, so that the city can get comfortable with what the numbers actually are. But we, our hope, speaking for myself and perhaps Mr. McGarr, is that we will not have an argument over the numbers by the time of the hearing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that from PBOT's perspective, they just want to get to whatever the actual number is.
Okay.
And get comfortable with that. And they're not comfortable with it right now. And that may be because we need to peek into, you know, some actual data to understand who was affected.
Okay. So at this point, we do have a dispute, an anticipated dispute, over the numbers, which may be resolved prior to the hearing date. Is that fair?
That is fair.
That's fair. And on that point, Mr. Frank, if it turns out as we go along and the number is something less than 1391, and we have to issue a revised or an amended penalty violation based on that number, is that something that would still, I assume, the appeal would still, I mean, it's up to Mr. Haney's client whether they want to continue that appeal, but would we continue in this case framework, or would we have to amend the penalty violation and start over, I guess is my question.
I think you have some discretion there. Both of you have some discretion there. You can continue this case, and I will make a decision. I mean, our rules for in an appeal are it's somewhat base. I can either find, I can sustain, I can find against, I can remand, or I can modify. So I can do, if you take the modification, I can, and I believe I have the authority, you may not, but I believe I have the authority to modify the determination letter, which I've referred to as Exhibit 2. I believe I have that authority. I also have the authority to remand it to require the issuance of a revised determination letter. Therein lies an interesting question as to whether or not, if the revised letter is still objectionable, are we still under the same case number? And I believe we can be, and that's one of the things that before we're all said and done, I'd like to stipulate to have a stipulation to as to if we revise the number to I'm making this up, to 600, and Mr. Haney still disagrees with it, and I come down to the city side, I want to make sure he still has the ability to argue that if I remand it on the basis of 600, and he says, I disagree with the 600, but we'll go through the remand process, but I still ultimately want an ability. I want you to be here as long as necessary so that I can come up with something that when you do, so long as the numbers stay anywhere near they are, one of you is going to disagree with me at the circuit court level. Okay. And I'd like, and one of the reasons that I make such a big deal out of preparing for these things and making sure we're going through these stipulations is the narrower I can send it up to, we can send it up to the circuit court, the more likely it is that there's a satisfactory. And I'm forgetting tactics from defense and prosecution. So I don't care what the motivations are, extending, keeping things alive, not paying, just being a pain in the butt. All those things aren't important to me. I want it to be as narrow as possible when it goes to circuit court. And in the way it's structured now, it's probably going to end up there. So unless I can come up with something absolutely brilliant that you can't disagree with, which is going to be an immense challenge based on the defenses raised, then we'll talk about the absolute or the actual resolution. But I have the ability to sustain, basically reject it, modify it or remand it, and I think interpreting remand and modify give me the ability to simply fix it and not send it back, or send it back, possibly keep it within the jurisdiction of this case.
Right,
I think
helpful.
I have those
That's helpful
options.
For us. Thank
yeah.
you.
All right. Mr. Haney, if you go to your brief and take a look at page one, and I'd ask the city refer to it as well. On page one, there were, you raised three separate kind of, I call it the staircase of arguments. The first one was PBOT lacked authority. Second one was, okay, it has the authority, but there was no violation. And the third one was, they have the authority and there was a violation, but they computed the penalty incorrectly. That is a very pedestrian approach to your arguments, but is that a rough, is that a fair representation of your arguments?
Yeah, at a summary level, yes.
Okay. Mr. McGarry, do you disagree with that?
It's what it says. So.
Okay. I spent the last hour and a half on four lines and only three words.
I don't.
And it's what it says.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, it's what it says.
And there was a good disagreement over what it says.
I would only say that Mr. Haney is a smart and capable lawyer and will probably come up with other arguments that I can't anticipate.
I'm going to limit him to those arguments in this case, if that in fact is a fair representation of his arguments. And if Mr. Haney, if you'd rather, I simply said, are you going to stick with the arguments you have on page one of Exhibit 3? If that makes you feel more comfortable and doesn't put me in a position of summarizing, I'm willing to live with that too.
Well, we do have, to at the end of the brief, we have some constitutional arguments.
Those seem to me to fall within your third argument, and that is challenging the penalty.
Correct. My belief is that the 1, 2, 3 there in the first page encapsulates in a summary fashion all the arguments made in the brief.
All right. So what I'm going to tell you is I'm going to be very unhappy with you if we add a fourth argument. In other words, something beyond the scope of those three. All right? You understand that?
Yeah.
All right. Based on Mr. McGarry's comment, I'm going to avoid asking some of the questions that I had because I'm afraid I'm going to get the same answer. It reminds me of a congressional investigation. I'm relying on my right to not answer that question or whatever. So I'm going to get nowhere. That's not a knock on you, Mr. McGarry. That's simply, I would have liked to have gotten more out of this than probably where we're going to go. One of the reasons that I was concerned with the numbers is a defense raised, or one of the arguments raised by Mr. Haney, was that the city didn't have the authority to charge more or assess more in penalties than the state had the authority to assess penalties. And I looked at it sort of simplistically, and I may have misinterpreted it. But the way I look at the state statute, it's maybe $500,000 is the max amount of a civil penalty for a data breach. Now, you may say a data breach, there was not one, but there was hundreds or thousands. But it was 500,000. If we get the number of drivers under 500, then that argument goes away. Based on the what I'm looking at here, is that if in fact the maybe not 500, whatever number it is using the subsequent and the 2500, there is some number of drivers that's going to put it under that $500,000 limit. I'm not a mathematician. I'm a lawyer, for God's sake. So I'll trust you, but to be real honest, I'd like to get, if in fact the number comes up there, I'd like Mr. Haney to simply say we're withdrawing that argument because the numbers don't constitute a total in excess of the state. You understand where I'm coming from, Mr. Haney?
I do.
All right. All right, let's talk about your schedule. You said you had a schedule? I'm backing off on some of my questions because I just don't want to waste time.
Well, we do, and I think that, I mean, at the outset, I should say a couple things. Number one, obviously this issue of the number is going to take some time to work out, and we've talked about a stipulated protective order, as Mr. Haney said, so that we don't have a breach on top of a breach in terms of kind of releasing protected personal information And the city's fine with that, and we already have agreements in place between the city and the company that deals with confidential and proprietary information. We just kind of piggyback on those agreements in the stipulated protective order, if that's acceptable to you.
It's acceptable to me, and the only inquiry that I'd have is do either of you anticipate the necessity that it be acknowledged by the hearings officer? In other words, endorsed.
I think from our standpoint,
we don't... I'm willing to stay out of it.
Yeah, we don't necessarily need that, but I think Mr. Haney may have a different position on that.
So, Mr. Frank, viewing you at least in an analogous role to a judge in this room and an analogous role to a court...
Kind of like it, but not...
Not exactly. Yeah. The concern would be, and I'll preface this by saying, we're talking about, I think, a very narrow band of information. This isn't like everything in the case or something. But, you know, driver's license numbers, individual driver's names, personal identifying information would find its way into an exhibit or a submission. The way a court would handle that, through procedures that are established, to be sealed in some fashion. So if you're in a position to direct the clerk or the hearings office to seal certain matters, that undoubtedly creates an administrative burden, which we respect. But to answer your question, I think we do anticipate your involvement, because there would be at least some nominal amount of confidential information that would pass to you and should not become a public record.
Okay. I don't have an answer to that, because it's a question that we don't get very often. And a review of our rules and our code, I don't think directly addresses under seal. All right. I'm open to suggestions on both your parts, and Mr. Haney and yours in particular, because your client doesn't want to have the you know, the breach magnified again or redoubled. I am willing to, and we do this in hearings on occasion, is that you will submit something, I will simply look at it, won't even, and on a very rare occasion, won't give it an exhibit number. You'll just hand it to me. You won't even offer it, in essence, from a court analogy. I will look at it and then give it back to you, and it'll never be admitted, and it's never part of our public file. I think Mr. McGare's office, and I don't think, well, he may be the one, because you used to advise the auditor's office, didn't you?
No.
Okay. But there is a public records person.
And
my concern is public records is always been a topic that when I saw it, I'd go down two blocks and cross the street, because I didn't want any part of having to answer the question. So I never really had to face it. I would prefer not having to make a decision to have something under seal that ultimately ends up with a public records request from the Oregonian or Willamette Week or whoever, and then it has to be, then it's disclosed. And I don't want to do that. I think Mr. McGarrett's office is probably the first line of inquiry as to whether or not I have the authority to put it under seal, and in essence, what I would look at is an opinion from his office saying you have the authority to put it under seal. We will defend that right if somebody does it. So at least you have some assurance. I don't know the answer to that. I can make it up and simply say I'll put it in an envelope and I'll seal it and nobody will see it. But I work in an office that has, for the most part, absolute, people see everything.
So it seems to me we're talking about kind of two separate issues here. So number one would be the sharing of information between the parties for purposes of getting to a stipulated number of affected drivers, which I think we can handle if Mr. Haney is comfortable with this without you signing off on some kind of protective order, and that's up to him. The second issue, I think, was what he raised about if something is offered into the record that is that requires some kind of seal, your authority to accept something under seal. That I don't know the answer to off the top of my head right now, but those seem to me the first may negate the second if we, you know, simply agree on what the numbers are. I'm cognizant of the fact that your decision ultimately, you know, is appealable as a writ of review to the Multnomah County Circuit Court. That includes the whole record. Whatever is in the record, if you've ordered it sealed, a particular circuit court judge might not see it that way.
Or might not get to see it at all, which would be a problem. I suppose it needs to be in the record in some sense so that if there is an appeal, it finds its way down the street.
Well, how about we put it in your timeline, that there's a timeline when the number's going to be agreed upon? I'm assuming you've anticipated that. If, in fact, there is no agreement as to the number, then I think we need to revisit that issue. And as sure. I say, I like to prepare for hearings. I think I know the statute and the code sections pretty well in this. I've certainly reviewed your documents. I tend to pride myself on being prepared. I am absolutely not prepared on whether or not I can keep something under seal, and I'm acknowledging that honestly.
With with that being said, what we had agreed to kind of on the phone this morning was that we would move the hearing date out till May 16th. I work this backwards, the city would respond on April 11th, by April 11th, and I think that could be the date by which we would agree that the number would be determined and that there wouldn't be a dispute about that. And I don't want to presume anything mechanically from your client's side that they could provide that information to us and we could get the agreement signed. And then that would leave Racier's response or reply due on April 25th.
Mr. Haney?
That is the schedule that we worked out, if it was acceptable to you, Mr. Frank.
16th is not, but the 17th would be.
Oh, well.
We have land use hearings. Is the only dedicated time for this room?
I picked Wednesday because today was Wednesday, but I didn't.
And I didn't Robin know. Picked Wednesday because I was here because I'm not full-time anymore.
Yeah.
And so I was going to be here, and it saved everybody. It was more convenient that I come in today. And it's the only day we really, actually Mondays we do too. So Tuesday and Thursdays are our open days. So you could go the 15th or the 17th. 15th tells. Let's go the 17th if it's agreeable with you.
The 17th works for me.
I apologize. I have a scheduled argument in the Oregon Court of Appeals on the 17th. I am available the 15th. Sounds like you're not available the 15th.
What time or two?
We're in the afternoon.
We can do morning on the 15th. Is that okay with you? Nine.
Okay.
That does work. Can I may I say something?
Please.
And I don't mean to steal Mr. McGarrett's thunder here, but part of what we have been discussing is the possibility of having a hearing based on quote affidavits rather than live witnesses. The code, as I interpret it, and I understand it's rare, but you could have a witness. We're going to try to avoid that if we can, but I don't know. Well, speaking for myself, I don't know that we're able to stipulate we won't have a witness in case something comes up or something. But it's the reason I say that is that if it does become a hearing with a witness, it possibly could take longer than 3 hours. But it's not my expectation that that would happen.
McGarrett?
We've structured some of these before in the style of a summary judgment type mm-hmm. proceeding, and that was what I envisioned. I don't, from the city's perspective, I can't think of a witness that we would need to call about a data security breach on their end.
Well, we have a stipulation that there was a data security breach. so
right.
No witnesses need to relate to whether it happened or not. We have in Mr. Haney's letter and in the city's letter, we have dates. And the reporting dates are going to either be correct or very close. And it doesn't seem to me as they're going to be so far off as to eliminate your argument that it took a year. Well, maybe it took 363 days or 300 days or some such thing. So it seems to me Mr. Haney's argument that there is no time restriction or time factor, it doesn't seem to me we need a witness saying, well, yeah, it didn't happen on the 17th or they didn't report it on the 21st or 22nd of November. We don't have, if we're off a day or two, I don't think that affects any arguments in this case. That's the way I look at it. So I don't know anybody who's going to have to testify on the data breach. The numbers, I can't emphasize enough that if there is something that I'm going to be disappointed on is if we have to argue about if I have to make a decision upon the correct numbers. It seems to me that reasonable people should be able to look at what the jurisdiction of the city of Portland is and know what drivers it has jurisdiction over. That seems to be sort of fundamental from the city's perspective, and it should be rational and reasonable, I would hope, to Mr. Haney. So the numbers I'm hoping you fix, right? The rest of the arguments are not as easily fixable, but they're almost all briefable. And I don't even care if you show up. I mean, we can set it up so you simply do everything by brief or whatever. If you want a short oral argument, we can put a time limit on the oral argument. You're going to the Court of Appeals on oral argument. I find that oral argument, when I have a well-briefed case, is just means that I get to come in and listen to somebody say what I already read. And so you're not going to hurt my feelings if you do a good job. And I respect your firm because I do land use cases with folks in your firm, and your firm does really good work. I respect the City of Portland City Attorney's Office. I've worked with Mr. McGair. He's certainly one of the better, if not one of the best, attorneys there. So I expect that he's going to do a good job. All right? So this isn't where I have two solo practitioners who don't know what they're talking about and never have dealt with these kind of cases before come in and say, well, God, maybe this works. I expect you to be professionals, and I expect well-reasoned, well-thought-out, well-written arguments. And so, as far as I'm concerned, the 15th we can have as an oral argument, but that would be my preference at the most. You may also stipulate that you're going to do it by affidavit, okay?
Yes.
All right. I can live with that schedule. Mr. McGair is familiar with this since I didn't ask the questions, unless it went away on my screen and I can't ask them. It did. Crap. I'm going to tell you the things that I'm concerned about, okay? Because I find it highly unusual that judges do this, but I prided myself as a hearings officer that there was no ambush or surprise. But let me see if I can make this work. All right. In my review, and keep in mind that you will always know your case better than I do. Even after I write my decision, you will still probably know it because I will spend probably less than a week on in its entirety. And my guess is you've spent well more than a week on it so far. And you will spend more than a week in the future on it. So judges and hearings officers are given a lot of credit for knowing things, but we also have a time limit to move things along. So here's things that concern me. All right. I'm concerned whether or not there was a violation. I agree. I'm concerned whether or not there was a violation because I'm concerned whether or not there's a time limit in the notice requirement. I'm concerned about whether or not either the state statute or the city code does one of two things. Either allows the city to have each driver treated as a separate offense, or in the alternative, treated as a subsequent offense. And that is, I'm using technical language because that's the language that shows up. The subsequent offense is language that shows up in the penalty table, and it's been referenced by, I think, both of you. And so I need to know more about that, and I am not willing to accept the city's position, nor am I willing to accept Mr. Haney's argument on the basis of what I have so far. I am dubious when I read Mr. Haney's arguments regarding, and I'm lumping them together as preemption. Peabot has had a number of cases that have dealt with preemption. They don't deal in anything, way, shape, or form with what we're talking about here. They were made by towers, professional towers, saying that the city of Portland had no authority to regulate towing. And I will tell you that the city persuaded me, because I had to really research preemption a lot, but they convinced me that the city had the authority to regulate, at least to the extent of those, in those cases, private towers. So I'm dubious about the preemption, and I'm going to need a whole lot more from Mr. Haney to convince me that preemption is a viable argument. I'm not saying I won't consider it, it's just don't have it yet. Mr. Haney, just so you're aware, in your first argument, you used the word catch-all. And you used it in the context of you were presuming that that's what the city. It would be very helpful to me that Mr. McGair, you cooperate with Mr. Haney, and if you're relying on what gives the city authority to regulate this area, that we either eliminate the catch-all or we put it in one of the other categories. But I'm going to be somewhat disappointed that you can't at least talk to each other and say, hey, look, I want to make this argument, but I need to have some idea where are you coming back at. And then if your legal argument's good, it's going to survive that. If it's not, then move on to something else. I have inferred or suggested that there is a statutory limit, and I'm only using statute, not code, but a statutory limit on civil penalties in the act that I talked about, the Consumer Identity Theft Protection Act. You're going to have to do better and explain to me what that is and how you got there in this particular case, how it relates to this particular case. My initial reactions, I told you, was it looked like $500,000, but my guess is that I'm at best 30-70 right, and I'm the 30. I'm not sure on that. I have very little confidence on that. Mr. McGair, you and Ms. Glick, you have a huge responsibility from my perspective on the when question, the notice and when question. My initial review of the section that I showed you that I actually handed out, 604, I can't find anything that relates to a time at all. And so, once again, I've spent an hour on this case. And that means I'm subject to being wrong. So you need to help me out as to where that damn win is, because I can't find it and I don't know where to look. And with that in mind, Mr. Haney's raised the issue that data breach should be looked at in the singular. In other words, somebody hacked, somebody found all these millions of things, hundreds of thousands of things, one thing, whatever it happened to be. Is data breach relate to the breach, or does it relate to each individual affected by the breach, or some permutation of that? And the reason I'm skeptical, Mr. McGarren, is quick on this, and the reason I'm bringing it up is it would seem to me a corollary to if I bought it was 1,391 based on Exhibit 2, would Uber have to submit 1,391 notifications of breach of security? It seems a little silly when I say it out loud like that, but I think that it follows at least to some extent. Mr. Haney, your arguments regarding, I think there was a citation to a case. Read the case, by the way. Oregon versus Zuniga? Anyway, skeptical that the criminal concepts apply to the civil context, even though that you opined that was the logical extension of that. I'm struggling with that one just a bit, because the case that you cited is a criminal case, and it does reference civil cases in there, but it seemed to me that it's more dicta than it is good law. And so it's your job to show me how that works. I'm hoping, I mean, my hope upon hopes is we get the number down to the point where we're not worried about it being so excessive that you can, with a straight face, say we can get rid of part of those arguments. But that's wishful thinking, I think, on my part. All right, those are my questions. Those are my concerns that I had when I reviewed the two documents, the Exhibit 2, which is the determination letter, and your brief. But I did read them a couple times and went back through them. I'm going to hold you to the stipulations that we've made, that we're not going to argue about the data breach. Hopefully not argue about the number, because you're going to come to that conclusion. And we're not going to argue about what the relevance statute and code is. I'm going to assume that 604, the one that I referenced, is the one that relates to notice. But Mr. McGarry, you have every right to say, no, it goes from 600 to 628. You should have looked at 622 or some damn thing. What I would appreciate, if that's the case, is you communicate that, whatever the number is, the citation number is, to Mr. Haney, and then you just send me a letter. We'll put it in the file. We agree or disagree, but here's what the city believes to be the relevant section for notice requirements. Because if I have that, then this case is going to go a whole lot smoother. Okay? All right, with that then, any questions? We've got the 15th. For the hearing, what I would like to do, Mr. McGarren, Mr. Haney, would you confirm the dates to my clerk, in a writing that's acknowledged by both.
We'll send a letter, and I'll send him a draft before
and
I
just,
send it to you.
And send a copy to this office. Always reference the case number on it, if you would, please. Everything should be referenced to the case number.
And just for simplicity, Ms. Treat sent you a letter that said that the requesting that all communications come to our office on this particular appeal, and I just want to, I think that is exhibit now 17.
I'll verify that.
Now you're talking about the boss.
Yes, we do have exhibit 17 redirecting all correspondence for your office to your name at 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue, room 430.
Yep.
And Mr. Haney, would you give the clerk one of your cards before you're done so we make sure we have the right address?
Yes, we'll do that.
There was some reference or discussion this morning that something came back that was sent to your office. And so we want to make sure that we have the right address. And I'm instructing the clerk that whatever address is on your name and address are on your card or to be used for future correspondence to your client.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything further?
If I could say, I did mention with respect to the stipulation about whether there is or is not a breach, and I mentioned the word quality. I wanted to just, if I could just come back to that word.
Go for it.
There was a breach. There's no dispute there. There may be discussion around the nature or quality of the breach, which we believe is limited in terms of the problematic information, just the driver's license numbers.
I particularly avoided getting into that because, as I indicated, I'm taking the fifth, or I can't answer that on whatever, or I'm not ready. And those are all good reasons. I don't knock it.
Okay.
But I'm fully aware that one of your arguments is that the and there was a case citation referencing name plus driver's license slash ID number is not necessarily going to impact the privacy, or I can't remember the exact phrase. I'm assuming you're simply saying that it wasn't even a reportable. I'm assuming that argument ultimately means that you didn't even have to report it, but you did out of the goodness of your heart.
Either that or that the to the extent there's discretion involved in calculating a fine, the low quality of the low private quality of the information should be considered.
Okay.
But there was a breach.
I understand that, but that's not, I understand what you just said. That is not the way I interpreted the language in your brief, is that I was looking at that and simply saying, to be real honest, there isn't even a violation because there's the exception in the statute that says if it's not going to affect somebody's personal, anyway, I can't remember the exact language, but it looked to me like it was carving out an exception. That's what I thought you were talking about. If you're looking to me to exercise discretion from the amount of the penalty and whether or not, like using an analogy of equity, if it's equitable or not, I will tell you right now that I will in all likelihood not modify it on any grounds other than it's either correct or incorrect. If I modify it, it's because it's correct or incorrect in part, and I will do that. The modification isn't to substitute judgment on my part for that of PBOT. My job here is to determine whether they're right or wrong, and I will modify something to the extent that they're right in part or wrong in part. All right? So I probably won't do that. So I'll save you time on that argument, is that it just doesn't work with me. And I've written so many decisions that basically say I'm not, and there's good case law in administrative law that I don't substitute my judgment. In fact, I think if you look in the Oregon Administrative Procedures Act in 183, you'll find that I'm not supposed to substitute my judgment. And so I probably won't do that. That doesn't mean that you can't be creative and figure out a way that I can. I'm not precluding you, but I'm telling you that's my perspective. Okay? All right, with that then, we'll close the hearing. We'll see you maybe back. But I can't implore you enough to try to come together with the numbers issue. That one bothers me because I don't want to have to get into the whole argument of sealed, not sealed, private, not private. I don't want Uber to have another data security breach because the hearings officer breached it. That just doesn't make any sense to me. All right, thank you for coming. We'll close the hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you.